beautiful music. Thanks, Scott, for playing that. That's great stuff. You know, I love jazz. Jazz just is who I am these days. I just love the stuff. It just melts me away, and I just think it's great. Chris, are you a jazz lover?
Yes, I am.
I figured as much. You know, I've been trying to get my hooks into you about some research you've been looking into and stuff. You know, so much out there, so much information. But what I've been trying to do is keep my issues on a small number, and then build them into complete truths, so that they can hold their own. They can be packages. This started with that Benjamin Friedman thing, because that is so powerful. And then trying to build out from that to where people can't deny the facts that are surrounding that particular man's work, and letting people see how it comes into today's activities. And when you take a look at the whole body of that work, it would be too powerful for anybody to turn away from.
Absolutely. But I think one thing that concerns people is they think that Friedman's a hoax. They don't realize that this man really existed, and that what he was saying is true and can be proven to be true.
Yeah. Well, he was giving these speeches in 61. He was, in fact, he was a wealthy soap manufacturing company owner. And he's in history books. The guy's there. I mean, you can look him up. His life and death are all on there, and the things he said. Yes, he's certainly not a hoax. No.
No, he owned the Woodbury Soap Company. I think he was worth something like $11 million, and he spent his fortune trying to inform people about the dangers of communism and Zionism.
But he was a communist Zionist in his early years.
I know he was involved with them. I don't.
Well, he may not have been, ideologically so, but he was certainly an accomplice to many of their acts during his early years.
He was in the inner circle.
Yeah.
And he knew what was going on.
He worked with Bernard Baruch. He worked with Morgenthau, and who's the other fellow? There was one other big muckety muck that he was working with.
Louis Marshall was big. Samuel Untermeyer was big.
Untermeyer is the one I was thinking of, yeah. Samuel Untermeyer. Now, these folks are the American side of this design team. Is there a European side of this design team that came out of the research?
I think the head honcho was always the Rothschild family from the time that Meyer, Anselm Meyer, founded the Rothschilds. His goal was to make the Rothschilds the new messiah. And there were rumors throughout the 1800s that Rothschild was going to buy Palestine from the Sultan of Turkey and make himself king of the Jews to fulfill the messianic prophecies.
Really?
Yes. Yeah, I have newspaper articles that discuss it. The problem...
And what year was that written?
From the 1840s, in that 1839, 1840, there was a lot of discussion in England about setting up a kingdom for the Jews in Palestine. And most of the people pushing it on the surface and in the press were Christians who wanted to fulfill the messianic prophecy so that they could bring on the messianic era. And for hundreds of years, it was the British who were most strongly pushing for a return of the Jews to Palestine. And a lot of the British actually thought that the British themselves were one of the lost tribes of Israel. There was a movement called the British Israel Movement, and it had its roots even before Cromwell and the English Revolution, which came about at the instigation of Zionists, Manasseh ben Israel.
Wow.
Came to England and got Cromwell to set up the revolution against the Catholic king. And that also, it was so that they could establish trade with England, but it was also to fulfill biblical prophecies that the Jews would be spread out to the ends of the earth. And one way of fulfilling those prophecies was to make certain that the Jews could be readmitted to England.
Wow. Well, you know, here's what I've seen. I mean, I've been called wrong on this issue. I see these folks over time having used religion. I don't see these people as religious. I don't see them as righteous in any way. I see them as people who use religion or religions, plural, as a tool or means to an end. And they do suspend ethics. They, what theologians call a teleological suspension of ethical principles, meaning their ends have always justified their means, which in its definition is sacrilegious to most any monotheism. So when you look at the whole thing, Christopher, they don't seem to be doing this from any religious standpoint. They do it from, it seems like they're doing it from power and control.
You may well be right, but I think the way that they manifest their plans hints that the people at the very top are religious, and the Rothschilds were religious. And they said that they were doing what they were doing for the benefit of the Jews and for the benefit of Judaism. Whether that was authentic or not is hard to say. But the fact that they wanted to create and did create a world government and the state of Israel when it wasn't really necessary, when the Jews themselves didn't want it, leads one to believe that they were religious and they were trying to fulfill the religious strivings of their people.
Now, if that's the case, and they believe their own hype in some ways, then they are believers in the Old Testament or the doctrines and what the scribes wrote in those documents. They must believe them.
Well, think of how wonderfully successful they've been by following them. Why wouldn't they want to believe them when everything that was prophesied they've been able to accomplish through the wealth of the Rothschilds? And the way they accrue that wealth was through creating wars. And all this was anticipated in those prophecies. So it was a perfect plan for them. And Judaism itself is not as deeply religious as many other belief systems. It's very materialistic and has to do with the material world. So it's not that big of a stretch. And there's been an undercurrent in Judaism since the time of Solomon. Solomon built the temple with the use of both angels and demons. And there's something called the dualistic principle in some sects, especially Kabbalist sects of Judaism, where they believe that they gain the most power by practicing both evil and good, and that they can bring on the messianic era by practicing evil. And that was most ardently advocated by Jacob Frank and the Frankists, who tried to destroy Catholicism in Poland by pretending to convert to Catholicism and by attacking the rabbis and the Talmud. And that was very similar to what happened in the Nazi era.
Well, they also pretended to be Christians in Spain.
Absolutely, and the Muranos.
That's right, and they infiltrated the Spanish hierarchy, and they were seen as usurpers at one point, and that's what caused the Inquisition, isn't it?
Yes.
Well, when we come back, Chris, don't go anywhere. You know, I've been hoping you were going to get in touch with me, because you really are a wonderful historian and an interesting man to have on the radio, and I'm very grateful to have you. Ladies and gentlemen, when we come back, we've got more from Chris and Daryl Bradford Smith on The French Connection. Here's the question I have. They leave this information out in plain sight, don't they?
Yes, they do.
And so are they not afraid that it will become mainstream knowledge and that it may displace them, or are they fearless, or are they got such hubris that they don't care? I mean, what kind of mentality have you been able to kind of glean from their activities?
I think that they have several issues that they work at once, and that they can flip-flop things to their advantage as need be. As you've mentioned, for example, in France, they may be trying to instigate incidents or fake incidents of anti-Semitism in order to force Jews to flee from Europe to Israel because they have demographic issues which could destroy their enterprise there.
Yep.
So,
there were actually some Jewish youth that got caught desecrating a Jewish cemetery here. Not a new tactic either, is it?
No, it's not. And since the time of Spinoza, leading Jews have advocated the idea that anti-Semitism is a good thing because it keeps Jews segregated. And it's been terrible for Jewish people throughout history. And much of the persecution that has gone on has been at the instigation of Jewish leaders who wanted to prevent Jews from rising in society and integrating into society.
Well, here's one of the interesting things about the French Connection and me personally. I grew up in a community, and one of the callers is from my hometown. He'll be calling back later, I hope. He knows there's plenty of, I sat next to people that were Jewish, and geez, in my mind, there's absolutely no difference from me to them, and except that when I was in grade school, grammar school, they went to Hebrew school, and they would leave early twice a week to go to this Hebrew school they went to. But I mean, I never saw them as anything different than me, and interesting. They don't see themselves. These folks don't see themselves differently. I don't believe, because I've seen them since, and I've got lots of New York friends that they don't go there. I'm wondering how much support they really have in the rank and file.
I think very little and dwindling. I think the state of Israel is facing a demographic crisis, which is why they won't allow Palestinians the right of return, even though there are many good-natured Israelis who recognize the injustice of everything that's happened.
Well,
I don't think you may not appreciate the significance of Israel to Zionists. It's their, as you say, raison d'être. There's nothing else for them. If the Jews were to assimilate, they would consider it the death of the people. And in the Jewish religion, it's not the individual who's immortal, it's the Jewish people that's immortal. And that is why they so seriously conceive of assimilation and integration as a life and death issue. And that's why they're willing to sacrifice millions of Jews in order to establish a Jewish nation where they can create a world ghetto and keep Jews segregated. And that's why they're willing to foment hatred against Jews to keep Jews segregated. It's a deeply, deeply important thing to some people. And these people are terrible tyrants. They never ask Jews themselves, hey, do you want to be a part of this? They simply tell them they have to be a part of this or face death.
Well, they're saying the same to us. Either we go along or we are going to be eliminated. We're useful idiots to these folks. And I want to talk when we come back about the people who work with them and what their motivation is and why this New World Order the malarkey gets so much traction. Ladies and gentlemen, when we come back, more from Chris and Daryl Bradford Smith on The French Connection. And ladies and gentlemen, we are back. We've got a short segment coming up here, and I've got my guest Chris talking historic issues before we go on. I want to let everybody know that and the reason I seem down is this is a wearing fight, but you know what? I won't give up, and I want everyone to know that you get tired by sometimes. Christopher, this is a hard fight here.
It's a hard fight, but if you bloody their nose, that's the end of it for them, because they're a small minority, and what they're doing is immoral. So they, that's another historical thing with the Jewish people, is their foremost enemy is called Amalek, and they hate him and say that they have to utterly exterminate the seed of Amalek, because Amalek was the first one to challenge the Jews, and they feel that any challenge which shows that Israel is accessible to a fight has to be utterly put down and eradicated, because they are in such a vulnerable position. That's why they fight
so hard. The attack on me right now.
Absolutely. And they're vulnerable, and don't give up fighting. If they attack you, you know you're touching a nerve, you're getting somewhere.
Yeah, well, my wife and I are, you know, I'm just some guy, man.
And but that's what everybody is.
Yeah, but you know, why am I so crazy, Chris?
I don't think you are crazy. I think you're aware. And I think other people, the education system has so effectively deflected people from recognizing the truth that they're blinded to it. And once you see it, it's very clear. And it's clear in the historical record. But another thing they want you to do is to be ashamed if you tell the truth. And that's a terrible weapon that they utilize, which is very destructive. But if enough people start telling the truth, they can't hide from it because it can be proven.
That's right. You're right. And here's the biggest thing, okay? I'm fortunate in that I was under their radar long enough to build a very solid base of work that's in the public record. And there is an awareness building. And if the fact is that now I'm in a position where to do anything or eliminate me is a very dangerous thing for them. In fact, I think it would be suicidal, because everyone who's listened to my show knows that I'm working very hard, I'm sincere about this effort, and I bring the facts to the table, and that this thing would end up biting them in the rear end terrible if something were to happen to me. So what they're going to do is try every other way of just getting rid of me short of that.
I think they'd try intimidation. They would warn you before they did anything. I think they would confront you and warn you before they did anything. And I think their best weapon against you would be to try to discredit you. So please continue giving out the facts, and they can't discredit you because what you say can be proven.
Well, how come I'm not? How come nobody else is doing this on the radio? It's very limited. I mean, I'm 3 months, 4 months ago when I started this with Eric Hufschmidt, we were out there alone, man. I mean, I got to be honest with you. There was only a smattering of people, and they weren't getting any traction. It was just pretty much nothing. And I got to tell you, it's a lonely place to be out there in front of a spearhead.
Well, it's been that way for quite a while, and the reason it's that way is because they have control of the media and can smear anyone who comes forward with the truth. So you've got to have a lot of guts. You're a rare individual is the answer. You're a very rare and courageous individual.
My wife thinks I'm a little bit cappy in the head, but listen, I want you to stick around. You got time for me?
Sure.
We got a big break coming up. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to have more with Chris because I just adore this guy's efforts. When we return, we got a break coming up.
What we're talking about is late night, early morning, low clouds.
Yes, we are, ladies and gentlemen. We're talking about low clouds and a chance of fog in the afternoon. And by the way, again, I'll remind everybody, that's Tom Waits, if you don't know. Tom Waits is a... He's an American treasure. For those of you who have never heard of Tom, you should go out and find out exactly what Tom's about. I'm sure Chris has heard of Tom, haven't you, Chris?
Yes, I have.
You know, Tom, I mean, Chris, you know, like when I'm doing this stuff here, I mean, I'm not the kind of guy. I don't worry about what people think about me, and I'm the kind of guy that just, you know, I don't care about other stuff like that. It's nonsense. And what's happened over time is they've made Americans, through media, through very, very powerful efforts of mind control, social mind control, into a bunch of neurotics, where there's nearly a person in America who can walk by a store window without looking themselves up and down and feeling bad or good about them. I mean, they're just all up inside their heads, and it's just an awful sight to see.
Well, I think we have to be careful not to lay the blame for all problems of modern society at the hands of the Zionists, because that gives them too much power. But I think they have intended to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if we want to overcome some of those problems, we have to take some personal responsibility and look at some of the phenomenological causes in our modern lives that result in it. You can't put everything at their doorstep, or you'll never be able to solve the problems. If they were to disappear tomorrow, we'd still have problems.
Well, you're right, and you're right about that. But, I mean, when you're starting to push people into metrosexual kind of thinking where men are women and women are men. And
again, this has deep historic roots. In the ancient Jewish temples, they used to use homosexuals at the gates to lure people into orgies in order to proselytize to them. These things that seem to us so modern and so new have deep, deep ancient roots. And they did it to the Romans, too, and they had a terrible double standard that no one in the regions of the city where they lived or in Israel could practice their own religions, and yet they claimed the right of religious freedom for themselves. It was always a double standard, and they utilized their wealth to corrupt the Roman government. And much of what we think of as new is very, very old. So
where does this come from? Where do you get this information?
Oh, from the ancient historians and from the Bible.
Wow, man.
I don't think this knowledge is as obscure among people as you may think. And I think one of the reasons it seems obscure to many people is that it's well known in the religious community, but not well known in the secular community.
Well, are you tipping your hand and saying that you're from the religious community?
No. Actually,
no.
I'm not religious at all.
Well, me neither. I mean, I have faith, but it's not the kind of that everybody else seems to have, apparently. But I have faith in the good works of righteous men and women around me, and I've seen good works. I've seen kind people, and I've also seen some really nasty works and terrible people. But
have to realize that the Christian community is deeply tied into the Jewish community in terms of the belief system. So they don't want to dispel the mythologies of the Old Testament, because in so doing they would dispel their own mythologies. And that's been a serious problem throughout history. And I personally think that Christianity may have been a stumbling stone thrown on the path of the Romans to gain revenge for the destruction of Jerusalem. And there's a lot of good evidence that supports that conclusion. And Disraeli boasted about that very fact, that in Rome, they made Rome the capital where a Jewish god is worshipped, a Jewish son is worshipped, and a Jewish mother is worshipped, and Roman gods are spat upon. So you got to admire them for being able to accomplish that feat. And there's a lot that could be learned. Jews have done many wonderful things throughout history. They've been very charitable to their own people. They have wonderful camaraderie, and there are many virtues of Jewish culture that should be emulated. And by emulating those in our own cultures, the good things, not the bad things that they try to throw in our path, we can learn from them and eventually overcome their influence, political influence.
I think that's a hopeful sign. We've got a call from Paul. And ladies and gentlemen, not great back sound. And when we come back, we're back right now, and we've got Chris with us on the French Connection today. I've been talking with Chris on email, and he's been calling the show, and I'm very grateful for his help and in his history lessons. I want to talk a little bit about the history maybe that I just kind of spoke about here. The fact was that all of those things were actually orchestrated with the acquiescence of the American government, the Stalin purges and giving up of all of this stuff. I mean, we had Roosevelt intimately involved in either turning a blind eye or even giving over a lot of this stuff to these people. And then through the 50s and 60s and 70s, we had a guy named Armin Hammer going back and forth to Moscow with technology, giving them computer technology of ours and keeping them up to our level to keep this false race alive. And, I mean, this has gone behind the scenes for a long time, hasn't it, Chris?
And isn't it strange that Roosevelt did nothing to curtail the spread of communism after the Second World War? Well, Truman.
That's right. And then didn't they kill Patton because he was speaking out against that, wasn't he?
That I don't know about. I haven't researched that. So
they drove a truck over General Patton because he wanted those commies to be eliminated.
Well, I think Nazism itself may have been a stalking horse for communism. Hitler was initially a Bolshevist. I think he marched in the funeral procession of Kurt Eisner. And shortly after that, he switched over. But even the Nazi Party itself, National Socialist German Workers' Party, was itself considered, in England especially, considered to be a communist party right up until the war began. So the way that communists work is they try to weaken the structures of society so that they can create a revolution. And the Nazis always promoted themselves as revolutionaries and socialists. And they wanted to eliminate private property. They wanted to eliminate the class structure so that everyone was of the same social class. All the tenets of communism were the party line also of the Nazis.
And in other words, what's happening in America right now? They're getting rid of the middle class. They're going to have us all one lower middle or upper low class, and they're confiscating property, and they're getting rid of property rights, and it's almost a carbon copy of what's happened in the past, isn't it?
It's very similar to what happened to the Russian people, which is what I would like to caution people about. And there were three historic revolutions that are very important to understanding what's going on. The Russian Revolution is one, the French Revolution is another, and the English Revolution is the third. And in each of these, there was a common pattern where liberalism, the idea of liberty, equality, and fraternity, was put forward to give people equal status under the law and to eliminate the monarchies, which were the only thing that could oppose their power. And once they instigated a revolution, things were chaotic, and then they would proclaim, well, since things are chaotic, we need a dictator to restore order. And that happened in each of those three revolutions. And it's kind of happening here in America, where Bush is asserting himself as sort of a dictator, where we have this situation where terrorism is used to impose the mythology that we're in a chaotic world and we need a dictator and a police state to restore order. And it's very dangerous. And I think people should be much more sensitive to it than they are.
Well, I tell you something. I think we're in a very late hour, and I think that they're going to use this. And this bird flu, by the way, is coming. Now, how it's going to show itself is anybody's guess, but and if whether it was made in a laboratory or in nature is also anyone's guess, but they're also opportunists, these folks. They assess situations around them and use them to their advantage better than just about anybody, don't they?
Yes, and I think if the bird flu doesn't hit us, and I hope that it doesn't, then it'll be an economic crisis.
Well, they
drained the wealth out of Russia and then shut off the czar to gaining the money markets. That's why Russia, the huge nation, was so easily defeated. And when the Bolsheviks took over Russia, they sucked all the wealth out of Russia, just as they had sucked all the wealth out of France after the French Revolution. The Rothschilds were caught again and again smelting gold and pulling it out of France and sending it to Frankfurt, Germany. And that's the reason that the French Catholics became so anti-Semitic that towards the end of the 1800s, we had the terrible Dreyfus affair, because there were very, very few Jews in France when the French Revolution happened. I think it was between 5 and 1500 in Paris. And these bankers were just sucking the wealth out of these nations and threatening them that if they didn't fight wars, their economies would be crushed and they'd have other nations attack them and they'd have no access to the money markets. That's the way they gained control over these governments, was to run them into debts with wars, and to they could ensure that whatever nation they wanted to win would win by drawing them into the war and then cutting off their funds. War very much depends on money, and people think that governments can just print money to pay for their wars, but it's not so.
Well, it isn't so, and it's not so in the case of the United States.
That's what worries me, is we're getting drawn into that same process, that we're running ourselves deeper and deeper into debts.
I don't think we're drawn into it. I think it's designed. We're being designed into it.
Yes.
You see, because I think from the people in charge right now were not elected. They were installed. So we had a coup. They've been helping this coup d'etat to take place for over a long period of time, until these last two elections were just completely stolen. And now we're in a situation now where they were even going to get rid of the only real measure of just how bad the finances are, which is the M3. So we're not even going to be able to take a look at just how much money is being printed. And we're looking at a collapse coming, and it's gonna make 1930s look like a walk in the park, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I hope not. But the signs are there, and it's following the exact pattern that the Rothschilds used to destroy nations in the 1800s and early 1900s, and really throughout the 20th century as well. We're falling into that pattern, and we should be aware of it and take control of the situation for ourselves. We can't just criticize them for what they're doing. We need to formulate systems whereby we can gain control over the situation and rectify it. It's not hopeless.
How do I protect my? You know, Chris, we're looking at ways of raising the consciousness here, raising these issues above the radar, so that people can start wrapping themselves around it. I don't know if America is going to have the courage to face it. I haven't seen any indications that we have a courageous society. In fact, I've seen quite the opposite to be true. However, there are some courageous people out there. I don't know if we're going to get the traction. What do you see as a going forward in this? And I don't see that we've got the gumption and the wherewithal here to do this. What do you suggest? to get this consciousness risen?
It depends absolutely on free speech, and our free speech rights are very much under attack, and people should be aware of that and resist it strongly, strongly, strongly. And they're always going to use monsters who say hateful and stupid things to try to vilify free speech, and we have to really strongly resist that.
Yeah.
When you're dealing with people or families that are worth hundreds of trillions of dollars, it ain't going to be easy. And it depends upon free speech, but it also, I agree with much of what Renee said, and I think we should mention that millions, if the Pentagon is telling the truth, millions of Vietnamese were killed, which is a substantial number, and it also
yep.
led into the terrible genocides in Cambodia.
Yes, it did.
And
yes, it did.
The church was involved in that, too. If I recall correctly, one of the reasons we got involved in Vietnam was because Din, or I forget his name, was a Catholic. And I think Kennedy and others had a sympathetic relationship with that. The other thing was the tin mines. There was a lot going on. But as you say, that was a minor thing, and it was part of this perpetual war that the United States has been in for a very long time now, and it seems to be continuing. And I think we do need an anti-war movement, and I think the anti-war movement should focus on humanitarian issues and also on financial issues, because they're interrelated. And
yeah.
people have to realize that we're bankrupting ourselves. If we continue down this path, our manufacturing base and our educational base will be destroyed.
Well, it already has 13% of our GDP now. We used to have 54% of the world's GDP just 60 years ago. And now, right now, we have less than 20. And the simple truth of the matter is, and dropping like a stone. And most of what we do produce is not world class. And the only reason we got 20% consumption is because Americans are buying their own products, but that's quickly stopping as well.
And it will stop as the Chinese improve with state-of-the-art manufacturing capital. That's remember that Japanese products used to be junk.
That's right.
But they when they built up their manufacturing base, they did it with brand new capital, whereas the British had captured German and captured Japanese old technology manufacturing capital, and that's what buried the British. Well, the Germans and the Japanese economies grew very quickly because they had state-of-the-art capital, and that's
well, that capital was provided by these same forces.
Absolutely. And that's another thing I'd like to mention is it's a myth that Hitler was a great economist and that the German economy and fascism produces wonderful economic results.
Yeah, he had a spigot of money that was coming in like a
absolutely.
And then what was his repayment? That he was to confiscate gold and monies from all the surrounding nations, which he did, and funneled that back as repayment.
Same thing happened with the Bolsheviks. They got all kinds of money from Jewish financiers, and then they sucked all the wealth out of Russia and sent it back.
And they got 10 times on their money, didn't they?
Absolutely.
Well, we got another segment in the can, and we got more coming here, Chris. Boy, you are just a wealth. I love this show. Ladies and gentlemen, we're back to the last segment here. We've only got a few minutes left with my guest today, Christopher from Chicago. You know, I couldn't do this fight, Chris, without my wife. And, you know, she loves me, and I know she loves me because she lets me smoke cigars in the house. And you know, it's not actually true, you know. I mean, your wife has to love you to let you smoke cigars in the house. That's true love, you know.
Absolutely. And the car is even more significant. If she'll let you smoke in the car, then you know you got a good one.
You got a good one. If she heard me say that, I'd be getting a frying pan in the head. But listen, you know, this whole mess, how am I doing it? How am I doing out there? I don't see the great numbers. I see some decent growth. I mean, but I don't see near quickly enough. I don't see it coming as fast as it needs to, because this other stuff that Tony just described and that you and I both know is on its way is going to happen soon. And I fear we're not going to get there in time. That's the thing. And I mean, give me some time. I get us there, but I don't think we're going to generate it in time. What can we do to turn this up, Chris?
Well, one problem is there's so much noise out there, people don't know what to listen to.
Yeah.
So I think your plan of getting donations and word of mouth is very good. What would be even better would be advertising.
That's right.
And I don't know whether or not you've contacted other sites and asked them to do cross-posting, but you're going to have a difficult time, as you know, that you don't want to destroy your credibility by cross-posting with sites that represent beliefs you don't believe in.
Well, that's right, and the worst thing is nobody's ever offered. The fact is, Carrick and I constantly are amazed that we're standing out here and alone. And some of the sites that I do trust are fearful, and the one of them that's been a mainstay for me, whatreallyhappened.com, of course, he's under massive amounts of pressure. He said, I said, have you ever been threatened? He goes, well, I was sleeping with a gun under my pillow, but he says, right now I've moved it to the nightstand. So apparently, you know, he's this is a tough racket we're in, man. I got to tell you, I didn't sign up for this. I've only been doing this 1 year next week, you know.
Really?
1 year next week, yep. My one-year anniversary is next week.
What got you going on it?
I was just livid when I saw what happened in the election, and I started calling around, and I found a spot. They didn't know what they were signing up for, but John Stadtmiller said, yeah, you want to do an hour show? And the next thing, it was 2 hours, and then the next thing you know, here we are. Here we are.
Well, you have a very good radio voice, and you're very charismatic.
Well, I thank you for that. I don't, it's not something I've cultivated, and it's certainly not something that I had figured going into this. All I was angry, and I'm a quick study, so I took my anger and my quick study nature, and I put it to work for myself. And I'm also a natural skeptic. I don't trust anybody, and I'm not afraid to tell somebody to go pound sand in their ear. And believe me, I've told more than just a few people to do that, and to my detriment in many cases. Trust me on that. Well, Christopher, you know, you got the number. Give me a ring. I'll be waiting for the call.
Okay, sir, I will.
All right, well, I'll be here waiting for it right after the show. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening in on this Friday the 13th. I don't believe in that nonsense, by the way, so don't you either. Don't buy into the silliness. Stick with the French Connection. We'll give you the real deal. Next week, ladies and gentlemen. Bye-bye now.